Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald in the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here around our kitchen table at KHOI Community Radio in Ames, Iowa, in the middle of Iowa, in the middle of everything. Yes, we are.
In the belly of the beast.
And as Donna often says, we are. We like to talk about food and how it's a big subject. Well, summer is slipping away. This was a football weekend. We still have not got much rain here in central Iowa. And today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we're going to talk about plums. When life gives you plums, Donna has at it. So we'll have that. Okay.
I'm plum tuckered out.
Oh,
let me tell
good,
you.
Right? Good. We have a few news items and look at a helpful book from the library about preserves. First, a little report about late summer happenings on Onion Creek Farm. The tomatoes, oh my goodness, have I been picking tomatoes, but just luckily they are slowing down a bit just because of my own peace of mind. But boy, what a good tomato year. And we have the second incarnation of the tomato hornworm. Boy, they're back in. I thought it was a early summer thing, but boy, they're back to kind of help me finish up the tomatoes.
Well, we've been talking about how cute they are, actually. And then we looked up, and tomato hornworms turn into what kind of moth?
The sphinx moth.
Which are kind of spectacular.
Well, yes, it's a spectacular thing. If you ever encounter one in the garden, a sphinx moth looks very much and is almost the same size as a hummingbird. Although you look at it, no, it's not a hummingbird. It is a moth, and it does the same thing. It gathers nectar. So sphinx moth, tomato hornworms, they're back.
Yeah, so we decided you need to remove them from the tomatoes, but you can put them somewhere else. Because they turn into those beautiful sphinx moths.
I've been giving to my chickens, but then I take these little cute worms off. And well, no, good luck. And I throw them over my shoulder. So good luck. Good luck, sphinx worms or tomato hornworms out there. Although we still have a lot of summer left, the basil, it got cold enough to nip my basil. It got down to the 50s one night last week. And basil doesn't like that. I mean, it's still
looks a little. You can still make it into pesto.
Yeah. But it's time to start thinking of things to do with all that stuff out there because the basil is kind of usually the first to go. Also, I went to this is a fun thing that happened on Onion Creek Farm last week, Monday. We had a movie crew show up at our farm.
It's a hot location. Onion
nothing
Creek
to
farm.
Do with me, but we were hired by this young man. I will give the name because he may be going off to Christopher Palmer. Yeah. Anyway, he's a person from, I believe, the Omaha area, and he's been in film and video for a long time, and he wanted a site to do, what do they call it? The pilot,
it's a pitch reel.
It's
the thing that you make a short sample of to try to get investors interested.
It was great. And he had lots of people, lots of equipment. He had a storyboard all figured out. So look for this maybe in the far, far future, but it is a sort of a sci-fi fantasy involving a fawn, as in half person with the bottom half of a deer, fawn.
And the top half is a woman.
The bottom half. So we had this interesting actress bouncing around, and so That's exciting. When the movie people show up, you just kind of stand back and direct people to the bathroom because they need that every now and then. But they did a fine job, and I wish them all the luck in the world with their movie about the fawn, F-A-U-N, fawn. Okay, there we go. So, Donna, talk about plums. How did you end up with plums?
Well, Helen Gunderson has two Damson plum trees. Now, plums are, they don't grow so much in Iowa a lot, except for the wild plums, right?
Yeah.
So it was also wild plum season, and Nico Odie brought me some wild plums. But I was up to my ears with these Damson plums, and when I first tasted them, I saw them on Helen's tree, and I, of course, picked one. And they are not eating plums. They're very sour. And so when she was, like, loading me up, and I've really not processed any of these before, and I was kind of like, oh, my God, what am I going to do with all of these kind of really sour plums? But they're cookers.
Yes.
They're delicious when you cook them up. They turn, the flavor is bright and wonderful, and it does take a bit of sugar, I must say. So I made, well, of course I made plum jam.
Yeah.
And I did not all of them, but some of them I used this process where I actually roasted them in the oven, which worked really, really nicely. I just put a flat cookie tray, one layer, and roasted them till they were soft and gooey. And then you can kind of squeeze and pick the pits out. So that's easier than pitting them before you cook them, which I always avoid. I always cook the plums, even if I cook them with liquid or something and then put them through the food mill to, you know, I just pity. And these really cling to their pits also, and they're not that big. So I would recommend, I loved the roasting technique. It worked really, really well. And then after I had them cooked down, I did several things. I made several jams where, you know, obviously you have to have sugar. I put tiny pinch of salt in and a little bit of black pepper. And then one of them I made with rose geranium. My all-time favorite has always been plum and rose geranium together. Make it just a delicious, delicious jam. And then on top of that, I made another batch where I layered in some cardamom.
Ha!
Which was, I have to say, I did two batches with cardamom. One of them, I got the cardamom more dominant than, it still tasted good, but there was a perfect balance between the rose geranium with just a little bit of cardamom, and that was my favorite. I also did a few other things. I made a plum dipping sauce, which is kind of, it's like a Chinese hot and sour. Mm-hmm. So it's very sweet. In fact, if I were making the recipe again, I used it from one of Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall's. He's one of our favorite English cookbook writers. I would make it a little bit more plummy, but you basically take the plum jam, but this is still in its runny, very sugary stage. You take the more watery parts off the jam, and then you add garlic, soy sauce or tamari, and rice wine vinegar, and some amount of heat, either one hot pepper or more or whatever. And then you just kind of cook them until they're all blended in together. And then I just hot packed it in a jar. And he said in the book that it would keep for up to a year in the refrigerator, which sounds a little intense to me. I hope it doesn't last that long. But it's really good on like fried rice or dumplings or even as a condiment for chicken and pork. So that was nice. And then the final thing that I made was I took the plum jam, actually the rose geranium cardamom one, and I made an ice cream. I didn't put vanilla in it, but did the usual custard base kind of thing. And then I used quite a bit of the jam. So it was close to sorbet, but it still was milk-based, and it was very good.
Yeah. If Donna makes ice cream, get your spoon ready, because this stuff was really good.
It was
It because of how plummy it was, bright pink.
I used probably more plums than a normal producer would because we had them.
We had them.
Why not? You know,
ice cream. Yeah. It was just intensely wonderful.
Right. I'm sure in a commercial production, it would be cost prohibitive to make it that much fruit based. But well, it was so it was really
well,
good.
They, probably they make everything with chemicals anyway. But if you're going to use your plums,
it was really good. So we have been plum crazy, just having a great
good.
Time with the plums.
Damson, that's Damson, and Donna gave me some Damson plums, and I've usually had the wild plums here, and so I've been playing around with those. But so must have been sick of plums, eh? Because I got this.
Oh, there
small
was just
payoff.
Plenty to go around.
Yeah, so I got some. I just dealt with the skin and pit problem just by making some clear jelly. Just
It came out. It's a beautiful looking jar.
Cook the stuff down and drip it through a jelly bag overnight and have at it with jellies.
Which reminds me, I also did some of the wild plums. Oh. So the wild Iowa plums, and you work with them a lot, mm-hmm. Lana, is there is an, I think it's an alkaloid in the skin, which is a little, it's puckery like a persimmon. Mm-hmm. So roasting in the oven brought out the sweetness of the pulp. And then if you don't push the skin too much, mm-hmm. because if you smash the skin, it's going to release those alkaloids. So how do you usually do that?
Again, my...
the jelly bag.
Cook it down in the jelly bag and don't squeeze the jelly bag.
Right.
But because then you get the clear.
Right, and the flavor of the wild plums was really, wonderful. Really nice. Yeah. If, as long as you didn't get that extract from the skin.
Yep.
So, and it's not something you're going to peel, believe me.
Because we haven't had a whole lot of rain, the wild Iowa plums are kind of small this year. Mm-hmm.
But they have a different flavor. You know, there are so many kinds of plums. Eating plums, of course, are the kind you usually get in the grocery store. And those don't have as much flavor as the Damson mm-hmm. when they're mm-hmm. cooked. They really are just for fresh eating mm-hmm. as opposed to these Damsons were just great for cooking. So
I'm so glad that you gave me some because I've never dealt with the Damson plums.
Well,
in that quantity,
no, enough to really play around with them. It was
and the Damson plums make a dark, lovely purple jelly. And if you cook down the wild Iowa plums, it's a little lighter and you can see through it a bit
more. Yeah, they're more yellowish red mm-hmm. Than purpley dark mm-hmm. like the Damsons. So.
Oh, yes. Good.
Well, so that was a treat.
A treat. Well, I've been doing jelly things. And I also made a batch of ground cherry jam this week. Ground cherries. People don't quite know what to do with ground cherries. They look like a weed, and they probably are. They actually are. The plant is a native prairie plant, actually. It's related to the tomatoes. It has nothing to do with cherries.
Is it related to tomatillo? Because they both have that husk on them.
They're
kind of cute.
They have a husk, and they have a
papery outer covering.
Yes, and what's nice about that, it's a real... it survives. It
does
survives.
It keep the bugs out a little bit?
It does. Those little paper things, paper coats
paper-ish,
on
each little
cherry, each little tiny bit of fruit, they are ripe when they fall off of the plant. You don't want to pick them off the plant. You wait. Days and days and days, unless you have a whole lot of chipmunks. They don't need because they like them too. But you can pick them up off the ground, and then you can spread them out on a newspaper, and they keep for, well, not ages, but they keep for weeks, and they keep on ripening just a little bit. And when they are golden, you can sit yourself down with a big bowl.
Yeah, they are a little sweet then.
Yeah,
they're just
sweet and lovely. And you can husk them, and I usually do that by watching one of those PBS mystery shows. And it's the kind of thing you do when you don't have something. Do two things at once because it's a little tedious, but you end up with ground cherries. And for years I've been using the Yule Gibbons recipe. Over a certain age, people probably know who Yule Gibbons is, but maybe under a certain age you don't. He was a wild food forager before wild food foraging was cool.
What was the name of his book that was so famous?
Stalking the Wild Asparagus.
Oh, there you go.
And it's in that book. Ground cherry jam, 1/4 of ground cherries, 2 lemons, and you grate the peel of one of those lemons, 1/2 cup of water, package of powdered pectin, 4 cups of sugar, and that's just about it.
Straight ground cherries with a little lemon.
Yep, that's it, and it ends up being pretty darn good. Yes, it does. I always make it. Also, on our recipe page on the Donalana Kitchen Show website, KHOIFM.org, there is a recipe for, and I've tried this too, Grandma Kniff's ground cherry pie. And except for the tedium of picking out those little ground cherries, it makes a lovely pie.
I have to say, so that recipe comes from Mark and Sharon Rasmussen, and I talked to Sharon a few weeks ago and told her, you know, we've recommended this recipe a few times. She said, oh, shoot, you know, my mother made it all the time. It was a requirement. I never liked it.
You at least try it. You may not like them, but I do like ground cherries.
Oh, I'm thinking, what's not to like ground cherries? You know, it must have been part of the family dynamic or something.
Right, right. And remember, they are not cherries. They have their very own taste. And it's a very Midwestern thing. It's good. It's good. Well, we have been enjoying a book. Donna, tell us about this book that you got from the library.
Well, you know, we've been talking about preserving, because this is the season. There's so much to preserve right now. And we did the show about canning. And there, of course, are other methods of preserving, canning, freezing, drying, rah. I found a book at the library, Preserving by the Pint, Marissa McClellan, Quick Seasonal Canning for the Small Spaces. We just like this book because she has some really, really clever recipes and some things that I hadn't. I'm going to tell you about this one, but I haven't tried it yet, but I'm going to do it because it is time to bring in herbs. Mm-hmm. And usually I dry them. Mm-hmm. This one is salt preserved herbs. It says this technique for salt preserved herbs requires just herbs, salt, and a jar. It does not initially seem like it should work because all you've done is toss chopped herbs with salt and pack it all in a jar. But it becomes a magic, savory, flavor-giving thing that can last in your fridge indefinitely. She says, I use this mix in soups, stews, braises, pots of beans, and anything that could stand extra oomph. So I am I'm going to try this. Her mix is basil, cilantro, parsley, chervil, sorrel, and leafy celery tops are all good choices. We will probably, of course, make our own mix. But as a preservation technique, I'm looking forward to trying this in addition to, of course, drying herbs.
What kind of salt?
What does she say?
My kind of recipe book, it's got beautiful pictures. It's got chunky salt, not little bitty ground up salt.
It just says coarse sea salt.
Okay.
So once we try this a bit and have some experience, we will come back to this and tell you how it goes. Now, another recipe she had that I had not thought of, and we both, Lana and I, grow Thai basil because you cannot buy it for love nor money. And I usually dry some because it's great in Asian foods, and that's the only way to get it. So she has a Thai basil pesto, which sounds really good, where that she uses toasted peanuts instead of pine nuts, a little bit of honey, sesame oil, and yellow miso paste, and then unseasoned rice wine vinegar. And otherwise, it's your regular. But that sounds like a really good change from their usual pesto. Another one that it's also bumper eggplant. This one sounds good. Pickled eggplant with mint.
Many eggplants.
This sounds really good. So we're going to try some of these, and we will get back to you. I'm sorry, we have the book checked out from the library.
This is pickled eggplant with mint. One, I read through this book, and one nice thing about her theory about canning and preserving is just, it really does not have to be a horrendous, awful process. Most of her recipes are like for
small batches.
Three jars. Small batches. Or even small jars put in the refrigerator. Not the boil your kitchen to death.
And turn out, pints and pints and pints.
No. It's good because we have little bits of things. It's good.
Here, now, this was another one. Now, a combination I had not thought of. Lana just did a bunch of pears because she had seckle pears up the wazoo. This is pear jam with chocolate. So the regular pear jam, and then you add a tablespoon of unsweetened cocoa powder.
Huh.
Doesn't that sound good?
Huh.
And you made one, didn't you? Which one did you make from here?
We'll talk about that one later because okay. I've got all the, I want to taste things later. Oh, another thing that was in there that I thought was a good thing to remember. Pestos do not necessarily have to be basil-based. There was a...
The Thai basil one.
There was a sorrel pesto.
Oh, right.
I don't remember what else was in it, but sorrel. It's one of those things that... It just jumps right at you,
right,
in,
and
in the
grow
spring.
Sorrel.
Yep. So. And then, but now it's starting to come back a little bit
after the cool
dry
weather.
Summer. And very, very good. And so these little things you can try, and especially if you have those little short jars, not the usual jelly 8 ounce jelly jars, but they make them in 4 ounces too. And It's good to, do that sort of thing. That's great. That's
right.
Great.
So that was Preserving by the Pint. She has another book which I have not seen, of Food in Jars. That was her first book. Marissa McClellan. So we're having fun with this one.
It is. It is because it doesn't always have to be sweet jelly. There's other things too, and we'll talk more about those preserve ideas a little later in the show, because it's real fun to kind of try somebody else's ideas every now and then. I want to mention, too, that Donalana Kitchen, well, we've been on the air for a long time, Donna. Yes, we have. And in that time, we've been putting some of our favorite recipes on our website. To find our recipes, go to khoyfm.org. And there is a whole bunch of stuff. This is a great radio station, but pull down the talk show section, go to Donna Lana, and you can find not only past show archives, all our past shows, and even a little bit about us, more than you ever want to know about us. But we do have a bunch of recipes that we like, and we've been talking about for a long time. It's Donna Lana Kitchen Show recipes, and Donna usually goes through these recipes because she actually knows how to read a recipe and follow recipes. I kind of cook from the hip, but we do try to test these out, and more people are asking me about things. And instead of, no, I'm not going to write out my recipe again, I just say, go to the Donna Lana Kitchen Show website, and you can probably find it there. This time of year, I've had many, many requests for my bread and butter zucchini pickles, which are pretty darn good. And actually, I use that same recipe to pickle okra. And another one that is, so how do I get this recipe? Go to the Donna Lana Kitchen website and look for oven candied tomatoes. A good bit of
advice. That's one of our all-time favorites.
For this time of year. Yes, it is.
And I have to say, we talk about a lot of other recipes that we don't really put. The ones that we bother to print up are very, where the measurements are really specific. Often recipes that we give are approximations just orally. Now, those we did not put on the recipe website, but the oral ones are where we're just kind of encouraging you to make it up yourself, and we talk more about techniques that you need to know and things like that.
Yes.
Because we are here to encourage you to cook for yourself and your family.
Yes, we are. This is KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That tune was a little bit sort of klezmer-ish sort of music from a band called Sugar Beet. And I played that because it's called Kosid's Jig. And actually, klezmer music doesn't have jigs in it, but this is a dance band, so they're going to put a dance beat to it. But it's a little bit of klezmer music because I believe later this week Yom Kippur happens. So music can connect us all, and that is something called Kosid's Jig. Very good. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and we're talking about small batch preserving and things we can do toward the middle of September to enjoy our gardens, enjoy the last of summer, and, oh, plums. Donna had some great things to do with plums. Very good, very good. In the meantime, let's take a look at a few items from our Donna Lana Kitchen News Department. Tick a tick, tick a tick, tick a tick. That is our ticker tape. And we do have a news department, whatever Donna and I sort of decide is our fancy. That's our food related news item. And Donna, take it away. You found something
interesting. Yes, this morning I saw in my inbox on one of the sites that I usually read, because Lana and I are constantly scanning the food and ag world to see what would be of interest to our listeners. This was a big one. This comes from Harvard. It was from the Harvard Gazette, and Harvard and King's College of London. The headline was, "Diet May Affect Risk and Severity of COVID-19. Huh. So I wanted to say this is hot off the press. It may get more picked up and referenced in the mainstream press, too, but... So Harvard, and they did this study on both sides of the Atlantic, and they had almost 600,000 participants. Ah. So they collected information in March of 2020 on people's diets, and they followed it until December of 2020. And then during that period, they collected what people were eating, right? And then during the follow-up, 31,000 participants developed COVID. So they figured out how diet was affecting them. And the previous reports suggest that poor nutrition is a common feature among groups disproportionately affected by the pandemic. But data on the association between diet and COVID risks were severely lacking. So they did this study and they found out that those in the highest quadrille had a 9% lower, highest plant-based diet, which also would mean eating lots of fruits and vegetables, a really healthy diet, had the a 9% lower risk factor in developing COVID-19 and a 41% lower risk of developing severe COVID. It says, of course, they don't want to de-emphasize getting a vaccine. That's the most important thing. But it says, our models estimate that nearly a third of COVID-19 cases would have been prevented if one of two exposures, diet or deprivation, were not present. So what they're saying is having a good diet, but also living in socioeconomic areas where you're not, highly stressed socially. So obviously reducing stress and eating well can help you not have not get COVID, or certainly not have as serious of a reaction. So there you go.
That seems to make sense.
Eat your fruit and vegetables.
If you're healthy, those COVID and those microbes and those viruses.
Well, and probably a lot of other things. Yeah. But it is often very hard to actually do research where you get a correlation in such a short term between diet and various diseases, but because COVID is so pronounced, it was a good research topic, and I think proved, of course, what you eat is a major influence on the status of your health long term.
Ha! So
there you go.
Heads up, folks.
Eat your fruits and vegetables.
Eat your fruits and vegetables,
and eat less meat. Uh-huh. Although this one said plant based, mm-hmm. Which maybe. I mean, it didn't say in the article where they were going for vegans or vegetarians, but obviously less meat is better for you and better for the planet, too. Good. But don't get discouraged. Just remember, eat those fruits and vegetables.
Just live right. It'll help. It'll help. Very good. Ha! Another news item. This happened a while ago, but we didn't bring it up. And I want to bring it up because it has to do with food. It has to do with children. It has to do with lunch. Lunch is good, and school lunches are important.
Yeah, this is a rather outrageous story from a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, end of August yet. I think most of us went through schools that had a school lunch program, and we hemmed and hawed about it. We didn't like eating those green beans at the time, but we had it. We had school lunch, and I don't know if every school had it, but we also had. I grew up in Wisconsin. We had a free milk break in the afternoon too, so we all got a little carton of milk as an extra thing. But school lunch. This is an item from Wisconsin, the Wisconsin School District of Waukesha. Waukesha is a rather sizable town just a little west of Milwaukee. They declined the universal free lunch program funded by the Department of Agriculture, launched during the coronavirus pandemic. Both because...
Right. This was a national program rolled out by the USDA to provide free lunches to all children.
All children.
So it would take away the social stigma of the children who couldn't pay.
It sort of relates to that news item you talked about. It's good to have a full belly.
And why not feed all the children a healthy lunch?
Yes.
It is the place where some children get the bulk of their nutrition.
What the most shocking thing about this article about the Waukesha School District, they rejected the program because some people on the school board thought that free lunch was spoiling our children. Really, truly, I mean, they even got quoted in the paper. Well, no, we can't get people hooked on food. That's not good. No.
Yeah, it's that phrase "free lunch" has always been associated with basically the other phrase, a free ride. You know,
But some of the board members said, "Oh, we're going to have a slow addiction to this service. Oh, like a slow addiction to food, and the students might become, and the families might become spoiled, and expecting to be fed
free handouts from the government. You know,
so." The Waukesha School District had a 9% child hunger rate in 2019, and it rose to 13% in 2020. It's a kind of an odd thing, odd response.
Yeah, well, but the upshot was even funnier. So the school board made this pronouncement about spoiling the children, and immediately there was such an uproar in the community that they had to actually retract it within days.
Bravo.
Yes.
Sanity returns. Because.
Yeah, you can't spoil your children with healthy food. That's...
Yeah. Because, well, also, learning is difficult for hungry children, and also this universal let's feed all our kids, because they're all our kids, puts kids on the same level. The idea of, oh, you're on subsidized lunch, school lunch, is somehow something to be criticized or separates the rich kids from the poor kids.
Studies have shown that sort of stigma is, let's say, not good mental health practices and inhibits children's abilities to enjoy their school lunches, for goodness sake. They have enough divisiveness going on as if anybody remembers being in elementary school. You know how.
Oh, there's enough stuff that goes on. Don't fuss about the lunch, please. Everybody. I grew up in a, I went to a small parochial school in Wisconsin. it's a Lutheran school. It's a small little Lutheran elementary school. And I never really, except I never did like green beans, I can't ever complain about the food service there because the same people that were in the church basement next door were the same people that did the school lunch and much, I remember, sides of beef and pigs and eggs and chickens and vegetables came from the people that went to the church. You know, it was kind of like instead of putting a dollar in the plate, you help the school lunch program. So that kind of food.
So you were doing farm to table at that time.
We were way ahead of our time. But yeah, Nathan. And then I remember my sixth grade teacher standing behind and tapping on shoulders if you did not clean your plate. She was pretty much a terror, but we did try our best to clean our plate because it is good for us. I just know it is. So school lunch, it's part of our lives. It's a good thing. Another news item. NASA seeks four people to live inside of a Mars module for a year. Huh? Now, you have only until September 17th to apply for this, but NASA is looking for permanent U.S. citizens ages 30 to 55 who are healthy and have no dietary concerns to live in this module that will replicate the problems of living on Mars. They are setting up a 3D printed 1,700 square foot module inside the Johnson Space Center in Houston and see how people get along in there. I think there's been some movies about this, hasn't there?
Science fiction horror movies
Something like. Okay, if we can't get along out here, how are these poor people supposed to get... Oh, boy. Anyway, they are going to have a experiment in the fall of 2022, and then they're going to do it in 2024 and 2025, seeing how people can work and live and
Can you imagine what the food is going to be like? It'll make cafeteria school food look great.
It'll make. Remember, they tried. There was an experiment with trying to grow everything inside a big.
Hydroponic stuff,
And that didn't quite work out because things are a bit more complicated than we ever thought. Oh my goodness!
We'll read about it in a couple of years' time and probably get a good chuckle out of the whole thing.
There'll be another movie.
Let's put Elon Musk and Bezos both in it together and let them see what their dream looks like in reality, right?
He could even wear his cowboy hat. That's fine with me.
And he can go barefoot.
Yeah, that'd be fine. When you think about what it takes to exist as a human being.
In a very confined space.
In a confined space.
In a very limited...
Now this test is going to be in Houston, okay? Although they've got a little hurricane problem right now. But think about doing all this stuff on Mars. I don't think we are
quite up
to it.
And how long this is for a year? You're going to be locked into it?
Let's see.
Some substantial amount of time, I suppose.
Substantial time.
Yeah.
It doesn't say... You can contact NASA and the Johnson Space Center because you could apply as late as September 15th.
What an experiment.
There you go. So you can apply for the Mars Dune Alpha Habitat. I'm not going to do that.
It's okay. In this instance, it's a good thing that we're too old to do this one.
That's my excuse.
We are exempt. We don't have to volunteer.
Very good. I think I'd last about 2 days. I don't know.
I suppose it depends on who they put in there with you.
That's true.
It's like the Fantasy Island television shows, you know.
Oh, it's got to be turned into a fantasy TV show. Oh, it's like that the movie The Martian with what's his name that got stuck on Mars. And now, this is most improbable because he ends up in his little habitat growing potatoes. Boy, oh boy, you can sure live a long time on growing potatoes on Mars. Very good. Anyway, Our human society has lots of interesting bits about it, and this may be just another one. Well, we'll get back to some more talking about the preservation book. But first, this is KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more about us at www.khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. Get back to a bit more talk about preservation after our little foray to the Mars experiment there. Okay. I've been preserving things. I've been drying things. I like my food dryer myself, but this...
Yeah, this time of year, Lana is like a busy bee.
Well, you don't want anything to go to waste.
No, it's time. It's now or never, right?
It's time. Like I said, I've been doing jams and jellies. And because Donna got this great book from the library and said, here, read through this. See what you think. This Preserving by the Pint by Marissa McClellan. And bless her heart, Marissa McClellan. Has small batches in mind, small batches. And so making just 3 jars at a time as opposed to 12 or whatever. I went across this recipe because your eye kind of lights up when, oh, I've got a lot of those. What can I do with those? This is a recipe in her book called Orange Tomato and Smoked Paprika Jam. Oh, oranges and tomatoes, huh? No. The wording is a little odd here because it isn't oranges and tomatoes. It's orange tomatoes. There's a lot of yellow tomatoes, yellow, orange-colored tomatoes.
Right. These are the low-acid tomatoes.
Yeah, the low-acid tomatoes. And I just happen to have a lot of small cherry, and that's what she suggests, the cherry gold ones. A big seller and a big popular tomato this time of year is the what do you call them? Gold.
The cherry tomatoes?
Cherry tomatoes, yeah. Anyway, I grow a variety that is a heirloom variety from Seed Savers Exchange, a round gold tomato called Engelhart, and I do that because I can save the seeds, and it's been good every year, so I've been doing that. And also, I had some odds and ends of other yellow tomatoes. There's a yellow pear tomato, and there is another seed saver or a heirloom variety that I like to grow called Blonde Kopfchen, which is a...
Blonde Kopfchen?
Blonde Kopfchen. Kopfchen, think German. C-O-P-F. Kopf means head. And it's roughly translated to little blonde head or little... Kopfchen is a term of endearment. So blonde Kopfchen, little blonde, little blonde head. They come on great guns this time of year. A yellow tomato. And I put those with my gold cherry tomatoes. Now, besides having no oranges in this, orange tomato and paprika jam, it's smoked paprika, and I'm not one for smoked tastes, but I decided to persevere. Go ahead. I didn't have smoked paprika, but I did have smoked sea salt. Donna gave me some smoked sea salt and also some applewood smoked sea salt, and it does call for sea salt in here.
So this is a savory jelly, it's a basically. Savory.
Yeah.
Although I would still put it on my toast for breakfast.
Yeah, it is not an overly sweet thing, but it's got a little tiny bit of kick to it, and I'd put in even more next time because
yeah,
I
it's
I like
a little
peppers.
In the family with the plum dipping sauce like
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah. Very good. Melissa McClellan says, I started making tomato jam several years back. I emptied that little jar that a friend gave me in record time and quickly made my own. Now it's one of my annual must-haves.
I like tomato jams on, like, grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yes.
Or even, you know, chicken sandwiches or...
Yeah. And I have always liked the taste of paprika, so I didn't use smoked paprika. I just used regular paprika. But if you like a little campfire taste in your jam, this is one decidedly for you. And this makes 3 half-pint jars. 1 dry quart, about 2 pounds, of orange grape-sized tomatoes, chopped. 1 1/2 cups granulated sugar, 1/2 cup lemon juice. Oh, sorry, one quarter cup lemon juice.
Right, you need that because these are low-acid tomatoes.
Yep. And 2 tablespoons of cider vinegar.
Oh.
1 1/2 teaspoons finely milled sea salt. And I happen to have smoked sea salt, so that's what we got. Then this calls for 1 1/2 teaspoons chili flakes, 1 teaspoon fresh ginger, 1 teaspoon smoked paprika, and 1/4 teaspoon cayenne. And again, don't count on me to handle.
You did not follow the recipe.
I never followed.
You did your own path through
it. Because I've got my own peppers at home. For years, I've been growing a hot pepper called Ausilio, A-U-S-I-L-I-O, which is a wonderful medium hot pepper. And I dry that and I grind that up. And whenever a recipe calls for chili flakes or something like that, that's what goes in instead. I like that. And I had some black urfa chili, so I put that in, too, because it's nice to have a little bit. So, Donna, what do you think?
I think it's delicious. And I think if you'd used the smoked paprika, you would have just had a different beast. Because that smoked paprika, while I do love it, it really dominates everything when you cook with it. So, this recipe calls for a fair amount of it. So
yeah.
You used sweet paprika instead.
Yeah. I mean, a teaspoon of smoked paprika for 3 jars, that's smoky.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a jar of smoked paprika where the tomato just becomes the vehicle. This way, the way you've made it, the tomato, it still stands there and kind of shines. It's really delicious. I would go with your choices there.
Very good.
Good job, Lana.
It's nice to play around a little bit and learn new things. I have had tomato jam before, but it always tended just toward tomato and sugar, which it's okay. But it's kind of nice to have something that's not quite sweet jam. This is a little bit of a different.
It's still sweet.
Jam.
It's also something that, like, you make a really good onion jam, which would be in the same kind of savory. Profile.
I wonder if she talks onion. Yeah, again, cook that stuff down. And here we go. Yeah, she makes an onion caramelized spread with sage. Huh?
Oh, onions with sage.
Very good.
Good idea.
Very good. I would like that. That's good. See, those recipe books, especially the ones with good pictures, thank you, are always a good inspiration.
Yeah, kind of gets your imagination going.
Yeah, it does. It does. Well, good. So, you're set with plums. I'm set with jam and jelly.
Yeah, I put a lot in the freezer.
Yeah.
I figure at Christmas time, a lot of this is going to come out for that sort of thing.
Doesn't it feel good to have Christmas kind of done?
Well, we got options. We're ready.
Oh, we are ready, and it's always fun to do that sort of thing. Yes, it is. So, we also have some other books here, but we'll be talking about those in the in future shows. Another book about mending called Mending Matters by Katrina Rodebaugh. It's talking about mending, and she talks about slow clothing, slow sewing. Slow down a little bit and fix those things. We'll mention that book again because I want to read that. It's nice to take control of your own life and fix your own every now and then.
And it's really nice to go to the library.
It is. Yes, it is. Good. Well, thanks for listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen today. What's on your plate? If you want to drop off an idea or a comment, you can you can email me at onioncreekfarm@gmail. Onion Creek Farm, that's all one word, @gmail. And you can get in touch with me, the Lana half of the Donna Lana Kitchen. And if you have an idea for a show, if you'd like to have something to say, or you've got a good recipe that you just think the whole world should find out about, we're the place. Yes, we are. We come to you here once a week. We've been doing once a week. Sometimes you wonder, Donna, what are we going to talk about? Oh, I don't know. We have not run out of anything yet. Matter of fact, next week on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we're going to have a special guest, Andrea Rissing.
Yes.
And
she is she got her PhD, I believe, in cultural anthropology or something like that. And she did her research in Iowa.
Yeah. And we're going to be discussing the stories we tell ourselves. We kind of justify things we do and we help things along. The term Iowa feeds the world. It says a lot about us. It says a lot about why we do the things we do. And it's nice to have somebody kind of look at that. And anyway, we'll be discussing that with her.
That's our show next week.
Very good. So, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon, live. We do this without a net. Live, without a net. Every
can't
noon.
You tell?
You can't tell. Every noon at Tuesday. And then you can hear it repeated on KHOY on the air on Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Or go to khoyfm.org. And you can find past shows. You can find all kinds of good programming. You can find our past shows. You can find our webpage. But you can hear just about anything on the internet now. So download us, put us on your device, listen at your convenience. Very good. Today we had music by Sugar Beet, a fine dance band from the Northeast. Fiddler Elka Baker, joined by Susan Brandt and Mark Glickman. And I think they've been playing a bunch of jigs for us today because why not? Support community radio. This really is a community effort. It's a volunteer effort. And it's good to know that we can talk to you folks out there. And so if you'd like to get in touch with us, do. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering, as usual, by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.